An hour later, when the case resumed, the judge reported the car had been found a block away and wanted to know how Fallon knew it would be missing. It is Fallon's habit to pace when he talks, Your Honor. During one of his many walks to the window, Fallon saw two gamins push the car from the curb. And you said nothing? Said the judge. For all Fallon knew, Your Honor, the lads were working for the local gas station and had been told to push it in to be filled because the car had run out of gas. Fallon makes it a point, Your Honor, never to scratch when he's feeling no itch. The jury's judgment seemed summed up in their laughter. Knowing this boded ill for his case, the district attorney quickly shifted the attack from Lieutenant Sullivan's raid to Fallon's alleged jury rigging. Your Honor, one of our original jurors, Charles Rendick, claims that Mr. Fallon tried to bribe him. He might just as well claim that Fallon bribed the two lads he saw pushing Lieutenant Sullivan's car down the street. On what evidence, Fallon asks. Rendick held up a wad and shouted that Fallon had passed it along to him at the Andrea Jane restaurant in return for a not guilty vote. This outburst caused a sensation as a riot of whispers swept through the courtroom. Fallon calmly replied, You need only call the waitress or the owner of the Andrea Jane. See if they will corroborate this untruth. The judge ordered a second recess to consider Rendick's charge. Upon his return, he declared that the allegation of bribery against Fallon constituted another trial, a different one, and directed the DA to continue. After calling to the stand a dozen more flat feet, all of whom had taken part in the bust and now testified to Lieutenant Sullivan's veracity, the DA rested his case. Fallon called Hank to the stand. I have but a few questions to ask you, Mr. Rodd. Do you drink?
No, sir.
Do you observe the 18th Amendment?
Yes, sir.
Have you ever before been charged with breaking the law?
No, sir.
Are you a member of the Anti-Saloon League?
Yes, sir.
Do you believe in your country, its flag, and its laws?
Yes, sir.
Fallon paced. Stopping, he turned and emphatically gestured with his right index finger. It is my impression that this baseless charge, brought against you for bootlegging, has deeply tried your religious convictions. Hank rubbed his eyes with the palms of his hands, as if to wipe away tears. For a minute, he fooled even me, but when he reached for his handkerchief, I could see his so-called crying was staged. As he opened the hanky, the crucifix and beads that Fallon had given him fell to the floor. Some of the jurymen jumped out of their seats. One nearly fell over the rail. Rodman pocketed the cross and the beads. Try, if you can, Mr. Rodd, not to be distraught. I know that for a religious man like you, the district attorney's questions will cause you great pain, but please bear with him. Rodman nodded, rubbed his eyes with the handkerchief, and sniffled a number of times. Fallon withdrew, and the district attorney took over. Mr. Rodd, the DA began, I will not, like your attorney, tax you unduly with unnecessary questions. You keep horses?
Yes, sir.
In a stable?
Yes, sir.
Did you also keep in the cellar of that stable a store of liquor?
No, sir.
But a store of liquor was found.
Yes, sir, that is correct.
Your store?
No, sir, I knew nothing about it.
How could that be? It is it not, your estate? You do live there.
I am frequently gone, sir. Any one of my numerous help could have used that space without my knowing it, sir.
So you disclaim any knowledge of the liquor found in the stable?
Yes, sir.
Once again, Rodman removed his handkerchief to dab his eyes. Was one of your hired help also responsible for the liquor found in the library, hidden in hundreds of hollowed-out books?
No, sir.
Ah, then you admit to storing it there yourself.
No, sir. I admit only to being an indifferent reader. When I bought the estate, the library came with it. I never opened the bookcases. To me, I sadly confess, they were no more than part of the furnishings. But of course, there might be another explanation.
Please be so kind as to share it.
I was in Nassau for a month, during which time a Parisian friend of mine, who fought with me at the front, stayed at my home. His name was William Marischal, and he was a great connoisseur of fine liquors and wines. He also had a rare sense of humor. I suppose he could have put the contraband in the books.
Where is he now?
The poor fellow recently died in the jungles of Belize.
Convenient.
Certainly not for him, sir. With great frustration and defeat in his voice, the DA turned to the judge and said,
No more questions, Your Honor.
Rodman left the witness box and returned to his seat. The DA came forward to give his summation. Addressing the jury, he said with great conviction,
If you believe in democracy, as I do, then you believe in rule by law. Prohibition is the law of the land. Once the laws are broken, chaos and anarchy ensue. Just look at Russia. This case is a simple one. A man was found with his hand in the till. For his lawyer to say that the hand actually belonged to another man strains credulity and patience. I would have hoped that a soldier who had fought for his country would own up to the truth. But since Mr. Rod seems to have forgotten his oath of honor and has chosen to misrepresent his vast involvement in the bootlegging trade, it is for you, the members of the jury, to find him guilty of breaking the law and thereby undermining our democratic form of government. God bless America.
Fallon rose in all his majesty and replied,
Your Honor and gentlemen of the jury, this has been a very difficult case, not only for counsel, but also for his client. We humbly admit that Mr. Rod was far too lax in policing his property. But whether the presence of liquor on Mr. Rod's estate makes him guilty is for you to decide. For all we know, the federal agents themselves might have planted the evidence. What we do know, without any doubt, is that the government invaded the sacred precincts of Mr. Rod's own home. Worse, the government, not content to break his belongings, has brought charges that will undoubtedly break his heart. Mr. Rod, I must tell you, is a teetotaler because of his religious convictions. Unlike those who resist taking a drink for fear of the law, Mr. Rod is a dry, owing to his respect for the Lord. Never in all Fallon's experience as a lawyer has he encountered such flagrant government disregard of those principles that decent, God-fearing men hold sacred. For justice, for truth, for hearth and home, I appeal to you, 12 good men, to administer a stinging rebuke to the government for invading and slandering the life of this innocent man. More is at stake in this case than apprehending a lawbreaker. A man's reputation hangs in the balance. A man who shouldered arms and bared his breast to alien bullets when his country called. Pausing, Fallon dabbed his eyes with his hanky. Fallon can barely speak. His eyes tear. His voice chokes. Unable to say any more, he leaves this case in your hands, confident that as God-fearing men, sensible of your duty as patriotic American citizens, you will render a verdict that will thunder down the corridors of time as a warning to every prohibition agent who dares to conspire against the innocence and purity of heaven and home.
The DA, in rebuttal, asked the jury to consider the source of Rodman's wealth. Surely it does not come from his prayers, he mocked, nor from charitable deeds. Continuing in this vein, the DA kept suggesting that Hank's dough didn't come from Sunday school meetings, but he badly misjudged the beliefs of the jury.
for in less than 30 minutes, during which time I constantly massaged my lucky silver dollar, they returned with a verdict of not guilty. Several of the jurymen hurried forward to pump Broadman's hand and wish him Godspeed. One even recommended a Catholic church just down the way, where Rodman could stop and give thanks.
"I need a drink," Fallon whispered to Hank, as we buoyantly left the courthouse. "Under the front seat of my car, I have some good whiskey."
We followed Bill out of town and stopped at a roadhouse for lunch. Fallon sipped from his flask through the meal, explaining that he'd gone to some trouble to learn that 4 Catholics had been seated on the jury. Rodman confessed that he'd opposed the idea of pulling out a crucifix to play on their sympathies.
"Hank says to me, 'Bill, what are you doing? I'm not Catholic.' And I say, 'Keep that to yourself. Just remember, when I start shaking my finger, you break down and cry. I'll pause, then you pull out your handkerchief and let the cross and the beads fall to the floor.' Hank says, 'It's a sacrilege.' And I tell him, 'So is prohibition.'